This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Yeah, no, that'll still be a priority. You know, for me, on our exit meetings at the end of last season, you know, I told a lot of the guys in terms of future, if it was contracts or coming back, anything like that, you know, the important thing is I got to get with our current and new, you know, the new coaching staff and kind of see how the different players fit based on what scheme we're going to be running. So we've been able to have those conversations. And I know Kyler is a guy that, you know, we want a part of this moving forward. So, you know, the time of that, I'm not sure how that all is going to work out, but that is a priority.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We got Brad Biggs in this morning, and that is the voice of the Bears general manager. That is Ryan Poles talking about, and it's a good point that we haven't talked enough about, I suppose, just how the current roster fits the current coaching staff. And, you know, it'll be very curious to see who's making some of these calls when it comes draft time. I like the idea that we were told by the head coach, Ben Johnson, that they all watch tape together, that they've looked. He had a reaction from the defensive coordinator about how tough the tight end is, and everybody kind of ran with that for a while. It is really interesting to look at the Bears and think about what they did a year ago, where they're at right now as a team, and how this is going to change in terms of the things they're looking for in a draft. I've been asking these questions quite a bit, which is really, what does the defensive coordinator want his defense to look like? We know they're now going to use Jalen Johnson all over the field. We heard him talking about, I believe he used the term traveling with whomever the best receiver is on the opponent. When you look at the schedule, Brad, they play some really good receivers.
Yeah, and they'll do some of that.
Yeah.
But the idea that you're doing that all the time is inaccurate, because when your cornerback is following their receiver all over the place, in many instances you are tipping off pre-snap what coverage you're going to be in. And so that's why people get caught up in the Bears haven't been doing this well. You know one guy who, like I've talked with him about it in the past, rarely does it.
Vic Fangio.
Yep. Pretty
rarely.
Pretty good X's and O's.
Yeah, you think?
Defensive, like, he's not bad, right? You know, so I would expect more man-to-man coverage from a Dennis Allen secondary. I think they'll be looking for length, but that's nothing new. Eberflus right. used to talk about getting length in some of the defenders and how that impacted the different positions and showed up on game film and that type of thing. They need help at edge rusher, and can they find it in this draft? We'll see, because you look at what they did rushing the passer a year ago, and I think everyone would agree Montez Sweat wasn't quite what they had hoped and wasn't what he probably saw it last season, but was playing through a variety of injuries. was available, okay, which was is a the first part of that, but he was able to battle through some injuries. I don't think he was near 100% for much of the year, but okay, if he's healthy this year and he's better, where's their pass rush at? Especially if they get a little bit better on the inside. I think it's above average, right? Like I'm trying to be realistic here. If you can add to that group and you get the right guy, maybe you then take the pass rush.
Would you take a pass rusher at 10, or is there not someone worthy of that?
I think you're going to consider a pass rusher at 10.
Yeah.
Like, I would.
Didn't they just bring somebody in, too?
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, part of their visit. It's not that that is any kind of clue.
Right, but they need more options. I think they need upgrades in talent and depth on the defensive line.
Yeah,
and I think you would say the same thing about the offensive line.
And forgive me, but what is Andrew Billings? What is the thought process on him?
You're hoping he'll be healthy, right?
Okay,
he'll be
the only guy they have that really is that big body in the middle until they got Grady Jackson, right?
Well, Jervon Dexter's, I thought he was okay last year. He got a little bit better. Jervon Dexter's seen what some of these interior defensive linemen have got. You look at what Milton Williams got paid after a playoff run with the Eagles and a Super Bowl championship, and he is set for life now with generational wealth for the Milton Williams family. Like, Dexter's seen that, and he's understanding of year three being huge for him as you look at his future. So whatever the best is that you're going to get out of Jervon Dexter, I would sure hope it's on the field in 2025 for the Chicago Bears.
Well, the timing of it would suggest that it's the right time for him to make his move, if indeed he's got to move in.
So they've got some guys there, but you need more, right? You want to be able to play them in waves. You want to keep them fresh. They were horrendous trying to stop the run last season. That was terrible. They how you go from being number one in the league against the run to god awful just like that is really amazing to me. But I think part of my amazement is that maybe I didn't completely appreciate Justin Jones when he was a member of the interior of the line there and he was playing next to Andrew Billings. You kind of almost had two nose tackles, so you weren't getting that pass rush that you would like and that consistent pressure in the middle of the pocket. But boy, did they play the run at a high level.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to me, when I look at the Bears, if I was just saying needs, it would all be on the line of scrimmage still, because a lot of the moves that they've made to improve in the offseason, and they signed, you know, five starters right away. I don't know if that's stopgap or long term or. You know what I mean?
I think that's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
It's difficult.
You get needs on the line.
Yeah.
I look at running back, that's probably more need than want. I look at safety, and that's kind of straddling the line between need and want. And I've gotten a lot of questions from folks over the past month plus about that safety position. And the first thing, natural instinct, my response is like, hey, let's consider positional value here.
Well, that's
and look at some of these other situations. And they've got, you know, Elijah Hicks is there. And you can go out and find a guy that you can plug in at the safety position. You need to get better near the line of scrimmage before you start worrying about finding your Swiss Army knife in the back end of the secondary that can do a whole lot of different things to be a matchup problem for offensive coordinators.
What style of safety does the defensive coordinator like?
I think ultimately you're looking for the unicorn guy is the guy with the range, right? Yeah. Is the guy that can really be impactful in that pass game. Like finding the thumper that can come down in the box and help your run defense Like those guys are easy to locate. Brisker does a nice job of that. They will come out of this draft with a safety.
Yes.
It might even happen in the first 2 days, so which would be the first three rounds. But I don't think we need to.
Here's the thing. I believe it was Philadelphia. They win the Super Bowl, and then they immediately sign a running back who's a great running back and a linebacker who's a great linebacker. These are not premium positions, but maybe those are the best guys at those positions. So you don't have to only think about premium positions. If you can get a guy who can be in the top five in the league at a position, you need him on your team.
Oh, there's plenty of places the Bears could upgrade right
yes.
now. Like yes. You look at it and you say, well, what are the few positions on that team right now that they couldn't use an upgrade at?
Right.
And that list is shorter than I think most people think. And the Eagles were able to operate that way.
Because they had the tackle.
They just keep reloading. Like, what are the Eagles going to do with the 32nd pick this year? They'll probably, you know, find some defensive lineman that makes Milton Williams leaving in free agency like, oh, well, yeah. You know, Milton was good while he was here. And oh, by the way, they'll get a compensatory pick in 2026 on account of that as well. And they just – and Howie Roseman just
keeps
kind of
reloading.
Reloading and reloading and reloading.
That's the way to do it. Like, you know, whenever you feel like you don't need a defensive lineman, grab one. And that's why I really think, while it's good that the Bears have upgraded on the line of scrimmage – That is far from a job
well,
that's
you,
over.
And you can't just build your lines through free agency and the trade market. It wasn't all free agency, like the trade market was involved here as well. Like if they are telling you, hey, we are prioritizing building this from the inside out, then you've got to use some considerable draft capital. And that's not just this year. Like that's next year,
I mean,
and the year after.
You know, we just went through this thing where they're trying to get rid of the so-called tush push, which is really kind of a quarterback sneak, and it's really like an overloaded quarterback sneak because they got a quarterback that is great at it. But they also had a center who you thought was the key to it, who then retired, but they had already drafted a guy. And they had another guy come in who was just as good at it. It's not like the tush push took a step back because somebody retired. You know what I'm saying? You have to be prepared for guys eventually leaving.
Or guys being hurt.
And frankly, they've got a lot of guys that have some age on them that are good players that they've brought in. But how much faith do you have in that lasting beyond the next couple of years tops? You gotta start reloading before you even.
You can't take a step back, look at it, and say, "Okay, well, this is good," because what you have here are, with the exception of Dahlman, kind of shorter term fixes. Now, maybe I'll be open minded about Jonah Jackson. Okay, he's got an opportunity to be more than a short term fix. But I think you got to say, hey, I got to see it first, though.
Yeah.
They've taken a leap of faith, and because of the head coach Ben Johnson's relationship with the guy, I think you trust in that. But
Dahlman is the right age. Dahlman's like 26 years old.
Yeah, he's going into year five.
Yeah, should get his prime.
That's exactly what they bought. That's why they made him the second highest paid center in the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he hit the market at the right time.
He's probably not skill-wise the second best player, but he's good.
And I was having a conversation with a guy who's real measured and always has interesting thoughts. And I said, you know, look, Dahlman's number two now in center pay. Like, he's not the second best center in the league. And his reply was, you know what? He's like, our pro department had some really high marks on him. Like, they really liked him. So I don't feel like it's a big overpay for what they gave Dolman, and I believe they got the real deal with him. But there's more work to be done.
Yeah.
For that offensive line to be anywhere near what Ben Johnson was accustomed to working with week in and week out in Detroit.
Yeah, and they sure don't have the great tackle that they have in Detroit. Let's get to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. Tony is in Wonder Lake. Hey, Tony.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
You know, everybody's talking about the pass rush, and although vitally important, you know, as little as 5 years ago, the Bears had a decent, if not a stout, running defense. And in my opinion, the three technique is more important than a pass rush, because if you can't slightly even diminish the effect of a play-action pass, it affects your blitz packaging. You know, put the team in a position, the opposing team in a position where you know they have to pass. If they can't shore up the run defense, in my opinion, that's where it all starts. I'd like to hear your comments. Have a great day, guys.
I think everything – you always talk about starting with having to defend the run. The three technique, they've got Grady Jarrett who, you know, we mentioned short-term fixes.
Yeah.
He's a short-term fix for you. At defensive tackle, not – too long ago, you looked at it and you said Grady Jarrett is the best three technique in the National Football League, not named Aaron Donald.
Mm-hmm.
That was who he was. I don't, you know, he's not at that level anymore with this mileage on him, but he was super productive for the Falcons last year, coming off an ACL the year prior. Atlanta probably played him more snaps than the Falcons should have. I think they'll be mindful of that. With the depth that the Bears have and have him out there for important key downs. Why are you paying that guy the money you're paying him? For money downs. You're paying him for third down. You're paying him for red zone. You're paying him for fourth quarter action. So I think they got a three technique there that again, a short-term fix. And I would imagine the run defense will be better, provided Andrew Billings is healthy.
Yeah, and if Jared is there and Billings is there, would that help Tremaine Edmonds be a better player?
Yeah,
I think got guys in front of him, because he wasn't very good last year.
Yeah, I think the linebackers, your off the ball linebackers are only going to be as good as
your
defensive linemen allow them to be, right?
That's right.
Like, you know, how do they have a clean path to the ball?
Yeah.
You know, how often do they have to shed and make a play? Because they've got to shed and make a play. I mean, that's part of the position. But the more opportunities they have to be unimpeded or unobstructed to the ball, the more impactful they're going to look, the more TFLs they're going to have, the more plays at the line of scrimmage they're going to make.
Do they need a linebacker?
Yeah, I think you've got to –
out of the draft.
I'm not
saying
– somehow, some way, right? Yeah. You know, in a perfect world, you find another Jack Sanborn, a guy that you don't use a draft pick on, but you evaluate and you kind of recruit as an undrafted free agent to come in and have an opportunity to make your football team, participate on special teams, and then see what you can do.
He was a good special teams player. He was. I had a friend who was furious that he's let go, and I was like, you know,
what were you going to pay him?
Well, the problem is, like, you know, he doesn't run great, and you don't get paid at that position if you don't run great. You know, you don't want a guy like, you know, Edmonds, the guy that has all the talent in the world, all the physical talent, but has he improved much since he's been in the league? So you kind of need to find
Edmonds,
middle ground there.
Yeah, listen, they paid Edmonds a lot of money.
Yes.
And I don't know that he's measured up to it yet, but one of the things, if you do look at their defensive statistics from last season, is they were really good, believe it or not, in the red zone. As a defense, and, you know, you take a step back and you say, well, you know, why is that? What led them to be successful? One element of it is that Edmonds in the middle of the field there is a really difficult guy when it's compacted down near the end zone to throw over, around, or like that's part of his game because of that 6'5", 260, super long arms, and he can move.
Yeah.
And he can move. So let's see. Let's be open-minded about what he looks like in this new scheme under Dennis Allen.
All right, we've got John Heyman next. We're going to talk to John about what's going on with the Cubs, what moves are available to them if they need to upgrade their pitching staff, how quickly they need to get to something like that if they do it, and is the timing wrong to make a quick move now? We'll talk to John Heyman next. It's Mully and Haw with Brad Biggs on the Score.
John Heyman, insider for MLB Network.
Chicago is watching carefully, no question about it.
New York Post columnist, Curb Your Enthusiasm enthusiast.
You hate people.
Well, I hate people individually, but I love mankind.
John Heyman with Mully and Haw.
I'm going to endorse the point where I say you never know with the Cubs, but I'm going to retract the I like the White Sox.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune, kind enough to sit in for David this morning. And we are delighted to welcome in our dear friend John Heyman, MLB Network, New York Post. He joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're pretty good. We're feeling good that the Cubs got the series victory in L.A. The Dodgers, they're not quite the team they were when they won their first eight games, the first World Series champion to do so. But they've hit a rough patch, and the Cubs got Japan revenge over the weekend. So that was great to see. 16 runs one day, and there's a lot going on with them. That maybe the biggest thing over the weekend is just this kind of this wretched news that Justin Steele is going to be out for the season, and he'll have surgery, and that will be what determines exactly how bad that injury is, which is a scary thought.
Yeah, I mean, overall, with their play, that was a great weekend for the Cubs. I mean, to beat the Dodgers 16-0, to win a couple games, beat Crow Armstrong with a couple home runs. I mean, he looks like he's going to be a star. I met the young man in spring training, a fabulous kid. And Quinn Berry, one of their coaches, said he looks like the best player I've ever seen. And he's carried it over, and they look like a really good team. Certainly a contender, certainly advantageous. They're in that division. I will say, the Dodgers haven't looked as great as we all expect them to be. I don't know if it's the World Series hangover, whatever, but, I mean, looking at their run differential, it's almost identical to the White Sox. Hard to believe at this point. I mean, look, a small sample size, but check it out, almost identical. In terms of Steele, obviously that's a big blow, losing a great pitcher like that, a guy who's already won three games. I mean, I see him noted as their ace. I would say Imanaga is probably their ace, but he's certainly a frontline starter, and they're going to have to look through, when they get close to the deadline, because really you don't see a good starter traded now. Nobody's going to want to send a message to their fans, we're trading our best starter in April. So it's not going to happen anytime soon. But as we get close to the deadline, and there are plenty of names that could be available beyond Alcantara, I did a list in the New York Post on Friday before this injury came up, that I've got at least nine names and really more of good, very good pitchers who are, I would consider them frontline starters who could be available.
So who's on that? Like Tyler Anderson, Chris Bassett? Who are we talking about, John?
Yeah, I mean, it's an extensive list, but they're mostly maybes, right? Alcantara is the most likely, obviously, outstanding pitcher with another year to go after this year, plus the option year, which means really two extra years. I know the Marlins are saying they're not trading him. Of course, who believes them? Nobody. So he's expected to be traded. It makes no sense that he's on that team. But beyond that, I mean, let's see what the Astros do. Framber Valdez is a free agent after the year. He's an outstanding pitcher. Pablo Lopez, the Twins are not off to a good start. His name was out there. Luis Castillo, I know the Mariners are saying right now they're not trading him, but he's been out there in the winter. Certainly, you're right on Bassett. Gausman also. Both Bassett and Gausman are pitching very, very well for the Blue Jays. I don't think the Blue Jays are going to give up that easily. So, you know, maybe they will not be dealt, but certainly a possibility. To me, the Cardinals are not a contender. And I'm not sure why Arenado's still there, but Sonny Gray, I think he's still there because he doesn't want to leave. He loves St. Louis. You know, I don't know what it is. The arch, I'm not sure, but he loves it.
Toasted like ravioli?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. They do have good Italian food. Not as good as New York, but good Italian food. But you're right. Tyler Anderson's another guy. But potentially the Pirates have a couple guys, Keller, Heaney. But it's not a short list of possibilities. That said, I would say that Gray and the Blue Jays guys are not that likely, but certainly Alcantara, Framber Valdez, Lopez, Castillo. I mean, it's not a bad list. The problem is, of course, there's a lot of teams that are pitching even worse than the Cubs. You know, I mean, the Orioles, obviously, the Yankees are going to need pitching. We'll see about the Mets. But, I mean, there are a number of teams that really need pitching. Among the contenders, basically almost anybody except the Mariners probably will be looking at pitching.
Is it fair to assume that a package for Alcantara when Miami does come around and decide that he will be traded has got to have minimum two top prospects because of the contract situation?
Right, the contract, and he's a very good pitcher.
Yeah, right.
Now, he's coming off of Tommy John. And we'll see. I mean, we're assuming, because he was throwing 100 miles an hour, that he's going to be great. So far, he has not been great, but, you know, he was great. He's a terrific guy. He is an ace. If he's anything close to what he was, certainly a Cy Young-type pitcher. So I'm with you. I would say that's right. I think it's got to be two pretty top prospects.
But the good news is the Cubs have them. And the thing that stays with you with the Cubs is you go out and you get Kyle Tucker on kind of a one-year deal, and you can't waste that now, right? You've got to respond to this move, this injury, in some fashion because of all you put into the Kyle Tucker thing.
Absolutely. I mean, this could be a one-year situation with Kyle Tucker. I mean, we saw a report that they were talking. My belief, and I've said it all along, is they're unlikely to get something done with Kyle Tucker. To see a guy who's a, you know, superstar-type player go to a new team with a year to go. I've seen Mookie Betts signed immediately with the Dodgers, even before the season, a long-term deal, which worked out great for the Dodgers, certainly. And I don't know that Mookie's regretting it, but it certainly worked out great for the team. I don't see that happening. It doesn't happen very often. I have no indication in this case that there's anything serious going on here. I did see that report. So, yeah, I'm with you. They've got to go for it. They've only got 1 year for sure with Tucker. And to sign him, they're going to have to do something that they really have not done. I mean, they stretched a bit with Dansby Swanson, but we're talking, you know, it's going to be, well, you know, more than double of what Swanson got, and that's not something the Cubs have a history of doing.
Does it help them out that I believe Swanson and Jason Hayward have gotten the two largest deals in Cubs history, both represented by XL, and I believe Kyle Tucker's with XL. Does that give the like a little bit of optimism that Jed in the front office can get this done, or you just it's so different that ownership is going to have to greenlight something that it really hasn't done yet?
Wow, that was really interesting. I'm impressed. That's impressive that you came up with that.
Big baseball guy, our guy Bigsy. Hold on 1 second, John. We got to clean up the line. John's in New York, clearly, trying to walk down the street. Yeah, that's pretty good. You are Mr. Baseball.
Well, I didn't just watch golf yesterday. And look up stats on Dave's guy, Colson Montgomery.
But you did do that.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I think the whole Kyle Tucker thing, and I don't know that they would pay him or not.
Like, if it gets to, like, if somehow.
It's over five.
But if somehow ownership greenlights that.
Yeah, we've got John back. John, you were complimenting Brad for his knowledge of agents.
Yes, I am very, very impressed by Brad, a football writer, knowing that. I mean, I think the Cubs' advantage is that it's the Cubs, and I think that a lot of people want to be in Chicago. I think a lot of people want to play for a marquee franchise, no pun intended, and they have a good thing going. You know, they have a very nice team. They have a good core. They've got prospects. There's a lot to sell with the Cubs. I think that's their big advantage. I personally think it's probably coincidental. You know, at least one of those deals, Hayward was signed when Theo was there. I mean, Theo and Jet. I think it's always about the money, and then after that, the actual team more than the agency. But I like the fact that he knew that. I'm impressed.
I think he just memorizes guys that aren't Boris clients, so then he knows them automatically.
There are a few. Yeah. There are a few.
Not many. Yes. So, John, there was a report from Bob Nightingale, I believe, over the weekend that the Cubs had gone to PCA, Pete Crow Armstrong, the aforementioned, you mentioned talking to him in spring training, and they were looking to get him under contract and extend him. That's not a bad idea. I don't have any problem with that. But I know that people, whenever you talk about that, would be like, well, why don't they put that money into – their priority should be Tucker. He's the guy. But you want to get as many guys – if you can get PCA under contract for, you know, however many more years, buy out all the option years there, that's a good idea.
Absolutely. I mean, PCA, you know, good for Bob. I trust him. I think he does a very good job. I don't know the particulars of that situation, but I'm sure that they did try. And, you know, if you can get PCA long term for $80-90 million, go ahead and do it. Or, you know, even if it's less, I mean, great. Or a little bit more. I mean, we're talking Tucker's going to be huge money. You know, I think, you know, he's 2 years older than Vlad Guerrero and Soto, so that certainly will impact him, and so maybe he won't get that $500 million, but we're talking, as I said, double the Swanson deal, so we're looking at least $350 million, probably, and probably more than that. And Tucker is not, I mean, PCA would have some incentive to do it, you know, because, you know, he hasn't made huge money to this point. And you never know, but Tucker's made big money. It's guaranteed that he's going to be making even bigger money, and there's really no incentive for him to do it. So if I'm them, I go to PCA and try to do it. Tucker, I just don't see that happening.
Great stuff, John. Thank you, buddy. Great catching up.
Always a pleasure.
That is our guy, John Heyman. It is always a pleasure. You've impressed John Heyman, Brad. Well done.
It's been a successful trip in here this morning.
I have seen your baseball card, so I know of your history with the game and how much you love it. It does not surprise me that you had that information at your fingertips. But when you impress a John Heyman, you should be proud of yourself. We got Jason Sobel next. We're going to talk to a man who walked the course with Rory yesterday, and we'll get his take on the wild finish to the Masters, Mully and Haw, with Brad Biggs on the score.
One look. Rory back and through. And he's made it! He's done it! It's a grand slam roar at Augusta National! Rory McIlroy on his knees! Down in emotion, clutching his head. He's won the Masters. He's won all the Grand Slam events. He's the sixth in the history of the game to enter golf's greatest group.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the score. Thanks to Sirius XM Radio for the for the final call there. That was Mike Tirico. We've got Brad Biggs from the Tribune in this morning for David, and we're delighted to welcome Jason Sobel to the program. He with SiriusXM, PGA Tour Radio, and he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Jason, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm still trying to catch my breath after yesterday. That was a momentous, historic Masters. It was fun to be there.
Well, I got to ask you. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like covering an event like that with a guy like Rory, who seemed to, I mean, it was like kind of an act of madness. Some of the ups and downs, the incredible turns, that, you know, you felt like you were watching a guy carrying like bags of flour as well as a golf club. I mean, he had this weight upon him that you kept thinking was going to crush him. And somehow he finishes up the way he did. It was remarkable.
I know some people who are listening right now might not be massive golf fans. Maybe they tuned in really for one of the first times to watch a big golf event yesterday. And if you don't know Rory McIlroy, haven't watched him much over the years, yesterday was the epitome of Rory McIlroy. Yesterday was the full Rory McIlroy, the microcosm of his entire career, which is, we're going to go into it with a two-stroke lead. We're going to talk all about it. I spoke with him after the third round. He told me, it's all about patience. It's all about taking it one shot at a time. I just want to hit my first tee shot in the fairway. We'll go from there. Instead, hits his first tee shot in the bunker, hits it short of the green, hits it to the back of the green, rolls his first putt, pass, rolls his next pass. Next one, he misses, and he makes a double bogey, and all of a sudden, we're like, here we go. Bryson birdies the next hole. Rory can't birdie the par five. We're like, okay, well, what we don't know about Rory McIlroy at that point is, when his back is against the wall, all of a sudden he starts playing his best. So now his back's against the wall, starts playing great golf. All of a sudden, can't handle prosperity, gets a four-shot lead with eight holes to play. That turns into a one-shot deficit with four holes to play. It really is incredible. The fact that when he gets into the lead, when he got into the pole position, could not keep it there. And then as soon as he faced some adversity, he bounced back from it. It was truly remarkable.
Yeah, the shot that he hits, the second shot on 17, was so amazing. When he hit that, you had to figure it was his, right? Like, that was it. At least sitting on the couch at home, that's what I thought.
I'm not sure I ever thought this was his until the three-footer in the playoff hit the bottom of the cup. And even after then, like, he's on the ground crying, and I'm like, are we sure? Like, I was not at any point going to give him this one. That said, yes, after 17, okay, just make a par on 18. And really, he did the hard part. The hard part,
the drive.
Hit the fairway in regulation. He did that. It's a tough driving hole. He did that, and you're like, okay, now we're there. It's a wedge. It's 125 yards. Hit a wedge to the middle of the green, leg a putt to a foot, and knock it in, and you're the Masters champion. What did he do? He hit the most nervy wedge shot of his career and pushed it right into the bunker. The bunker, which, by the way, 3 years ago, he holed out from to claim a second-place finish at the Masters. And you're like, okay, well, there's some hope there. He hit a bunker shot that didn't quite come down the slope as much as he wanted. Hit a really bad putt. I mean, look, if a pro is going to give a putt a chance, he'll hit it on the high side, the low side. It's never got a chance of going in. He hit it on the low side, goes to a playoff, and it, again, the microcosm of Rory McIlroy, it's get into a playoff, all of a sudden things are working against you, and then he goes out and wins.
Great stuff, Jason. Thanks to Tom. Really appreciate your time, and you really captured the essence of it. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
That is Jason Sobel from SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio. I got to tell you, I mean, the guy has four double bogeys and wins, and he completes the career Grand Slam. It was an ordeal watching it. I really felt like he was going to fall apart.
Like
so
he said,
many times.
You got the full Rory experience.
Yes.
Like all of it was bundled into 18 holes on Sunday in Augusta.
The full Monty of Rory McIlroy. Naked rear end and all. I mean, my God, that was really quite a feat that he pulled off. We've got Bruce next. We're going to talk to our guy, Bruce Levine. We'll find out what he thinks the Cubs are going to do with their pitching woes now. And we'll ask him about the White Sox actually winning a series. Congratulations to the White Sox. They got that done. It's Mully and Haw with Brad Biggs on the score.